It gives me great pleasure this evening to introduce Mike Taylor. Here at the law school, we're very proud because he's actually one of our graduates, and I would actually say one of our most illustrious graduates. He has had a long career in the public sector, going straight into the FDA after law school, serving first as FDA staff lawyer and executive assistant to the commissioner, actually working with our own Dick Merrill in the very beginning. He has served as the administrator of USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service, as FDA's Deputy Commissioner for Policy, and he then established and led King & Spalding's FDA practice, and then was Vice President, maybe not in that order, of Public Policy at Monsanto Company. He co-founded and chairs the Steering Committee of the Food Safety Research Consortium. He is now research professor at the George Washington School of Public Health. His research agenda there focuses on issues that affect public health agencies as they are carrying out their prevention mission. He served on numerous commissions, including one recently with our Jim Childress, looking for the EPA, on pesticides. I think it's fair to say that no one in America knows more about the complex issues surrounding food safety than Mike Taylor. And so please welcome him here tonight. Thank you.
Thanks, Mimi. And again, thanks for having me down to do this. It really is a treat for me to be here. As Mimi said, I did graduate from this law school some time ago. Just to date myself, I actually started as a first-year student at Clark Hall in the main grounds, so I'm prehistoric even before the acquisition of the business school. But the second and third years in this building, which was just this building, as some of you may or may not know, and so the transformation of this place is always amazing to me when I come down. And as Mimi said, I did get my first job out of law school, going to work for Dick Merrill, who was chief counsel of FDA at the time, and started out as a staff lawyer there. And that experience has stood me in more than good stead for my career, and I appreciate everything that Dick has done for me. I am happy always to talk about food safety. I don't spend all of my time working on food safety these days, but I do spend a fair amount of time working on it. And as Mimi indicated, a lot of my work currently is focused on public health institutions and how they're equipped to do their prevention job. And that really is the lens through which I examine the food safety situation at FDA and in the federal government generally. And so I'm going to talk a lot about what needs to be done to address what I think are some very, very fundamental problems in FDA's readiness to do the food safety job that people expected to do. I think it's a little, feels a little funny coming to a seminar or a series that is titled FDA at the Crossroads and be coming in here with an idea or belief that actually what needs to be done is to break FDA up, that FDA's job has gotten too large for any one commission or any one agency to address. But I'm going to come to that bottom line before this time is up and try to justify that perspective. I don't think that's the only right outcome, but there's a lot that, in my view, that recommends it. So let me just sort of give you a little preview of where I want to try to go and sort of what the main messages are here. I want to take a minute, you know, just to say a little bit about what we mean by food safety as a public policy, public health challenge, you know, why it's important, why it's difficult. I also want to emphasize that, you know, through a lot of experience over the last 20 years dealing with sort of modern food safety, foodborne illness problems, meaning the problems posed by pathogenic bacteria and other pathogens in food, we've learned a lot about how to do food safety right. We know a lot about how to address this problem, and I think it's important to keep that in mind. I guess the main message is that, from my standpoint, the institutional tools, you know, the laws, the organizational structures, the way in which resources are used simply hasn't kept up with the knowledge that we've got about how to be effective in preventing foodborne illness and ensuring the safety of the food supply. And so, you know, the bottom line, as I indicated, that I'm going to work our way toward is, you know, this idea that really some very drastic change is needed in the federal government's food safety system, which is what I'll be focusing on, and that change, I think, needs to begin with change at the Food and Drug Administration. I think in thinking about sort of what is the food safety problem, you probably have a pretty good feel for this just from reading the paper. We've had a lot of outbreaks of illness. We've had a lot of major recalls of product. The numbers that are on the slide here in terms of the actual incidence of foodborne illness are CDC-generated numbers that portray what I consider to be a significant public health burden. 5,000 deaths is not a small number. That's a fully loaded 727 going down every other week, and I think by any standard that's a significant loss of life and then significant hospitalizations and cases as well. I would note that these numbers, which are what you see everywhere, and you see them on CDC's website still, are a bit dated, and they need to be updated, and CDC is in the process of doing that. But these are the sort of the standard numbers that we use to depict the scale of the problem from a strictly public health burden standpoint. But I think it's important to think about and understand the food safety problem as society engages the problem in broader terms than the number of deaths and illnesses, as critically important as that is. And this is, I sort of try to capture this in the next two bullets. You know, one aspect of it is this loss of public confidence that occurs in food safety when people see bad things happening. And you know, sometimes this issue of loss of public confidence is talked about from an industry perspective. We need people to have confidence in products so they'll buy them, and that is actually a very compelling driving, you know, motivation of the food industry and a lot of companies to do very serious work on food safety. But it's got a broader social dimension as well, I believe, because first of all, people in their family lives and in their individual lives want to have confidence in food. The last thing you want is to be doubtful about the safety of the ground beef or any other food product that you're purchasing. And so this issue of maintaining public confidence is, I think, a sort of a public good in its own right. It also has potentially direct public health consequences. And that really lies in the fact that there are some food choices that we want people to be making from a public health standpoint, fresh produce being an obvious example. We then have a series of outbreaks of illness associated with pathogens, E. coli and other bacteria in produce, you know, raising real questions in some people's minds about the safety of that. Well, again, the last thing you want is people not choosing healthy components of the diet based on a concern about the product's safety. So again, that's another broader dimension of the food safety problem that I think helps explain why it gets media attention when there are issues. And of course, the sheer economic impacts, trade impacts, are significant as well. And we import a lot of food. We've seen in the China experience how the potential impact of food safety concerns from an international trade standpoint. And also, when you see, outbreaks happen, like the major ground beef outbreaks from the early 90s or the produce outbreaks, I mean, this has incredible impact, at least over the short term, on specific sectors of industry. The spinach industry was essentially out of business for a few months last year, and the costs, are in the hundreds of millions of dollars. So I think, again, I would depict the food safety problem as being, a significant public health problem and also a larger social problem that justifies a serious effort to address well. I think it's important to emphasize a couple of points about why it's not such an easy problem and why it's a problem that's constantly changing and creating new demands. I mean, part of it is just the sheer scale of the food system. It produces the food and within the context of which food safety issues arise. I say there are millions of actors. I mean, there are a million farmers or ranchers in this country producing cattle for beef production, some or maybe only producing a couple head a year. But every one of those is part of what I think of as the food safety system, the food system that relates to the problem of food safety. And, of course, there are hundreds of thousands of processors, retailers. It's an incredibly complex a system that produces and markets our food, and it's a big, dollar-wise, at least $1 trillion component of the economy. The complexity, with which that goes into producing the food supply that we enjoy, I think also deserves some understanding in terms of how it relates to the causation and prevention of foodborne illness. And you often hear this expression, farm-to-table. Food safety is a farm-to-table issue. Well, we need to take a farm-to-table approach. And there's a lot of validity to that, and it lies in the fact that the ultimate outcome of foodborne illness is a product, typically, commonly, of events that occur all the way back at the point of production on the farm, and then events that transpire all the way through the production, processing, and ultimate distribution and consumption of that food. And I think, again, the example of E. coli in beef and produce is a good example, because, again, that bacteria originates in a natural reservoir of mammalian intestines, guts, and on the farm, typically cattle, but also wild animals. And so practices in feedlots, for example, can influence the rate of infection and shedding of that bacteria. But then what happens in the slaughter plants, the processing plants, the way that product is stored, temperatures it's kept at, and the way it's cooked and consumed, every one of those points along the way can affect the likelihood that at the end of the day there'll be a level of pathogen in the food sufficient to make somebody sick. And so when people say we need, it's a farm-to-table problem, we need a farm-to-table approach, they're really talking about that reality, that if you're going to be preventive and effective in reducing foodborne illness, you've got to address causative factors all the way along the way, each of which is also an opportunity for prevention. At each of these points, you've got human behavior influencing the likelihood of risk at the end, and so at every point along the way, there's opportunity to change practices to reduce risk in the end. And so that basic idea is something that's going to recur when I talk about some of the solutions to the problem, and just to understand that we've got to think about this as a systems problem. The last points that I'll make, I guess, about the difficulty and dynamism of the problem is just that the food system is changing all the time. I mean, you know that just from your own experience, and it is driven, in fact, the change is driven to a very large extent by consumer demand for cheap food, for convenient food, for food that's packaged in novel ways. This drives change, it drives new technology, it helps drive the flow of imports, and all these factors raise over time new changing food safety issues. So this is not a simple problem that we're addressing. As I indicated, though, there are we've got a lot of knowledge about how to address it, and I've tried to sort of capture some what I think are sort of the key elements of a modern approach to food safety, one that can be effective in reducing the current burden of foodborne illness I cited, and also, I think, better maintaining public confidence in the food supply. The first two points are really kind of broad principles that I think apply to both what the private sector does and what the government does. And first is this whole idea of focusing on prevention, and you're going to hear me use that term prevention over and over. But it's almost any human endeavor, any risk situation, we're far better off focusing on how we prevent the problem, reduce the risk through preventive measures, rather than reacting to problems after the fact. And I'm going to talk a good bit about the extent to which our current food safety system is fundamentally reactive rather than preventive. So prevention is a key principle. And then taking what's labeled here a science-based and systems approach to building food safety in from farm to table really just builds on that observation I made a minute ago about the nature of food safety causation and prevention. And so, again, whether you're looking at this from a private sector standpoint, what they ought to be doing, or looking at it from a government standpoint, the way the government can be helpful in food safety, these two principles, I think, apply in both cases. So the last three points really relate to the government's role, and I'm going to be talking for the rest of the time primarily about what the government's role is in food safety. And there are three really simple points in my mind, which we're going to keep coming back to. One is that the role of the government, given the fact that it's the industry that produces the food, the industry makes it safe or unsafe throughout most of that chain of production and distribution and use. The government's role is not to make food safe. The government's role is to establish a standard of care for the industry's role in preventing foodborne illness, a standard of care that presumably should be based on what we know about what modern technology and preventive controls in food production and processing can do for food safety. So establishing a standard of care for prevention is point number one. Point number two is empowering the government to enforce that standard of care. And this is just sort of the basics of the government role in regulation. You need to set a standard, you need to enforce that standard. And the third point, which is, again, germane to the problems I see institutionally in the system, Is government using its resources well in implementing this system so that it's focusing its resources where those efforts and resources will get the most risk reduction payoff, that is, will be most beneficial for public health. These elements, you should know, are ones that in the context of the current very active debate in Washington that's going on food safety policy are very widely embraced by the consumer community, by the industry community, by sort of the expert community for many years has been saying this. And I think you're going to actually see FDA coming out with a plan for food safety that's going to embrace these basic ideas in some fashion or another. We'll see how far they go. But this is the part that people agree on. This is sort of the principles that, if implemented, I think people believe will substantially improve the safety of the food supply. But getting to the, I think what really I want to make the heart of this discussion, you know, these principles, this knowledge about how we can make food safer is not going to pay off, is not going to be of value unless we put in place, in the case of the government's role in this, the institutions that are capable of pursuing that, of following that trail and implementing that sort of approach. And so you've got government agencies that are expected, I think most people would, you know, citizens would say, well, why isn't FDA doing this? Well, you know, we can't expect agencies to do what we haven't mandated or given them the legal toolkit to do. If we haven't given them a workable organizational structure, and if we don't, you know, have institutions that are adequately financed and are using their resources well. And so these, you know, three kind of basic principles of what makes a government program successful and effective are ones that I want to kind of apply to the analysis of the current system that I'm going to pursue in the next few minutes. And so let me again try to, without getting too bogged down, start giving you a sense of what I mean when I say that the current system isn't equipped to do these things that I've described. You know, define a standard of care for prevention, empowered to enforce that, and making good use of resources. And you have to get a little bit of a sense of who the actors are in the system, and what are the characteristics of the system that lead, I think, a lot of us to think that it isn't equipped to do what's expected. And this is just a kind of a first snapshot of the players in the system, and I've already emphasized the extent to which the private sector, the industry, is very much a part of the food safety system. What they do has more direct influence, obviously, on the safety of the food than what the government does. So all of these actors are important parts of the food safety system. We're paying a lot of attention to the fact that the public sector, the government element of the food safety system, is very complex and fragmented. And in fact, some 20 or more agencies spread across FDA, HHS, USDA, EPA, are involved in food safety in different ways, whether from a regulatory standpoint or from a research standpoint, or playing other roles in food safety. There are also 3,000 state and local agencies involved in food safety. So you've got this incredibly diverse private sector, incredibly diverse and fragmented public sector role. And the system, when we say food safety system, sort of consists of these institutions and the way in which they work together. And there are enormous necessary interactions in terms of sharing information, collaborating and responding to problems that need to occur to make the system effective. A lot does occur, but the institutional arrangements really get in the way of that occurring quite well. There was a 1998 report out of the Institute of Medicine. Dick was on the committee. That really, if you're interested in this subject, I would recommend you read. It does describe the system, and it makes some basic recommendations about institutional reform in the system, and I think remains a pretty accurate, you know, primer on the subject. And out of that, I think analysis that not only is in that report, but that others have done, including myself, I mean, I think you really have to understand, you know, fundamentally, or how fundamental some of the problems are, in the current food safety system. And it hits all three of those points of statutes that are obsolete, organizations that are fragmented, and a system that makes really poor use of inadequate funding. And let me skip over these quickly because I'll elaborate in some subsequent slides. But you know, the statutes are of 1906 and 1938 vintage. The statute, the basic concepts that govern the USDA program go back to 1906, the basic principles governing the FDA program go back to the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act enacted in 1938, which are statutes that do basically focus on reaction rather than prevention, and I'll explain that a little bit in a moment. I mentioned the fragmented organizational structures, and I'll elaborate that in a moment, as well as the resource issue. And I think the resource issue becomes a fairly central issue in all of this. And I know Bill Hubbard was here last week and talked about FDA's dire resource situation. And I'm not going to talk about the level of resource. I'm going to talk about how the resource is used and the extent to which USDA's inspection system, driven by statute, they're doing exactly what Congress directed, wastes an enormous waste. You know, more than half of the federal food safety resource goes into an inspection activity that is essentially not useful for food safety. There's also this issue of the imbalance of resources between USDA and FDA. FDA oversees about 80% of the food supply, gets about a third of the total resource, and of course the flip side is that USDA regulates about 20% of the food supply and gets two-thirds of the resource. And that's a resource imbalance that I think has, you know, real consequences for the effectiveness of the program. Because of this, the Government Accountability Office, GAO, earlier this year, added the federal government's food safety program to the list of programs that it deems high risk, meaning high risk of failure, because of this very inability of the system to make good use of resources and to target and to be preventive in pursuing food safety. I don't know how many of you have taken any food and drug law courses or paid any attention to the statute, but I feel obligated, since I'm back at law school, to at least touch on some of the legal tools that are involved here. And when I say that the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act food safety tools are reactive, I'm really referring to these provisions that FDA still relies on to address microbial pathogens in food, which are provisions that involve definitions of adulteration, so that substances are considered food products are considered adulterated if they contain poisonous or deleterious substances that may render the food injurious to health. It's sort of a broad standard. And then FDA is empowered to enforce that standard by bringing judicial enforcement actions. Basically, they're authorized to inspect facilities, then make findings and collect samples and make a judgment about whether a product is adulterated under this legal definition. And then they can go to court and seek seizure of the product or an injunction or even a criminal prosecution. But there's no mandate, in this law, really no mandate at all. It's a set of tools. It's a set of tools that are given to an institution with no direction about what its mission is, no mandate to reduce foodborne illness or enhance public confidence or anything. It's simply a set of tools that FDA has given that it can use to address food safety. It's also not given really efficient enforcement tools. I mean, this is a 1938 statute that does not give FDA access to the records that plants keep that document their own safety practices. There's no authority to recall product. There's no authority to impose civil penalties on companies. So all of what are considered sort of modern enforcement tools in a statute that is set up essentially to be an enforcement statute are missing from this law. To FDA's credit, I'm saying this because I know Dick will hold me accountable for being fair and balanced here in this discussion. FDA does have in the 1938 Act general rulemaking authority. It can promulgate regulations for the efficient enforcement of the Act. And to FDA's credit, it's used that authority coupled with these basic adulteration provisions to establish regulations that are intended to establish standards of care for companies, including standards of care in one specific sector to be preventive. And so in the seafood sector, which is in FDA's jurisdiction, FDA has issued regulations requiring something called HACCP, which is an acronym for Hazard Analysis and Critical Control Points, which is a sort of a contemporary accepted model for preventive process control in food production. And FDA has promulgated those regulations through rulemaking. My argument is that while that was a creative bootstrapping of the authority and was sustained in the context of seafood, because there was an industry that in the early 90s was in crisis from a public confidence and economic standpoint, and the industry really urged FDA to do this. That use of this rulemaking authority has been sustained there, but it's not a basis for a comprehensive approach to preventive controls across the entire system, and I don't think it would be sustained, in fact, if FDA attempted to do that. So FDA statutes are obsolete, and I think not sufficient for today's challenges. I think it's even more glaring in my mind how out of date the USDA statutes are, and it does go back to this 1906 idea that the way to solve the safety of beef was to do carcass by carcass inspection of beef, and that the same rules now apply to poultry, you know, in slaughter plants. So to this day, and let me just say that requirement came about at a time when the concern was diseased animals or visibly damaged, you know, animals coming into the food supply. That was sort of the problem of the day that Upton Sinclair, you know, highlighted in the jungle. But that same model is driving the use of USDA's resources today, when we know that the real problem is bacteria. You know, and bacteria that cannot obviously be addressed or seen in a visual, you know, inspection. And so the system results in what I consider almost absurd results. In the case of poultry, for example, you know, there are 8 billion chickens that go through slaughter plants every year. There are about 3,000 USDA inspectors whose job it is to visually inspect every one of those chickens. They get about 1.8 seconds per chicken to do this. They're very good, actually, and they work very hard in being able to see the visible defects. And what they essentially end up doing is being a good, you know, government-subsidized quality assurance sort for the industry. But obviously, they're not seeing the bacteria, and they're not able to address the salmonella and the campylobacter. But nevertheless, there are $300 or $400 million of the federal food safety budget, which totals about $1.5 billion. So, you know, a third to a quarter, or a quarter, I should say, of that resource is going into a program that 20 years ago the National Academy of Sciences said makes little, if any, contribution to food safety. So, you know, the USDA's statutes and the resulting allocation of resources are obviously out of date. There's also a real lack of enforceable standards in place at USDA, and this is a product in part of the statutes, but also the historic culture of that agency. And this is really critical, because in a modern system of preventive controls, what you want is a regime in which there's a standard of care about applying state-of-the-art preventive controls, but then also performance standards to measure the outcome that's achieved with those preventive controls. So it's not enough to have a plan for reducing contaminants. There ought to be standards that drive how far those contaminants are reduced. That's really not part of the culture at USDA. When I became administrator there, in fact, coming from FDA to USDA, the historic position had been, in fact, that there was no accountability in slaughter plants for bacteria. The assumption was that people would cook the food, and therefore the USDA official position was that it would not hold the slaughter plants accountable for controlling pathogens. This was, you know, I came in there at a time when there was the aftermath of some significant outbreaks associated with a fast food chain out on the West Coast, the so-called Jack-in-the-Box outbreaks, where there had been, you know, 4 kids killed and 500 people made really seriously ill with this particularly dangerous pathogen. And so the kind of one of the most immediate and obvious things to do, which we did, was to change the policy and say that, in fact, we will declare this particular pathogen to be an adulterant under the Meat Act, and that product containing it, any amount of it, would be illegal in commerce. But to this day, that really remains the only enforceable performance standard, if you will, applying to slaughter plants at USDA. There's been efforts. In fact, another thing we did there was establish standards for salmonella in beef and poultry and hogs. But those have sort of withered on the vine, if you will, as an enforcement tool based on the Supreme Beef case here, which is a case brought to challenge the standard as it applies to salmonella in ground beef. which put a legal cloud really over the whole performance standard program at USDA. Well, the agency, the department, and I really lay this at the feet of the politically responsible people, have sort of let that lay as the state of play. They've not sought, they didn't appeal Supreme Beef, they didn't, they haven't sought legislation to cure whatever statutory defect there might be. And so USDA is really out of date in very fundamental ways in terms of the way it uses resources in the absence of standards. And I'll just, the one last thing I'll mention, is just in the spirit of sort of illustrating how the laws comprehensively need to be updated, is that the Food Safety and Inspection Service at USDA, the food safety agency that's responsible for meat and poultry production, has no authority to address what happens on the farm, which we've learned, in fact, is precluded from regulating on the farm. And we've learned that original point of production is one of the most critical points in the food safety system. The agency at USDA that is authorized to go and regulate on the farm, the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, has no food safety mandate. It's about the health of the animals. It's not about human health. And so there's a huge void in the authority there, which just sort of illustrates that we've got statutes driving programs that are not based on current knowledge. Let me now turn to the sort of laying the foundation for my radical suggestion that we break FDA up, and just sort of kind of illustrate what I mean when I say that the FDA structure is obsolete, it's fragmented, and needs to be changed. And the first point is that if you look around FDA, it's really a collection of agencies, if you will, distinct subcomponents, each of which has their own director and their own staff and have their own mission and provisions of the statute that they implement. I think most people would guess that the Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition, the headquarters component that is that is most involved in food safety issues, is the lead within FDA on food safety. But it really isn't. It shares that responsibility with the Center for Veterinary Medicine, which regulates pet food and also regulates animal drug residues in food and animal feed residues in food, which are important food safety issues. There's a separate Office of Regulatory Affairs, which oversees the field force at FDA, the inspection force, which has its own separate leadership. Theoretically, is supposed to be responsive to the policy direction of the Center for Veterinary Medicine, the Center for Food Safety, but in practice, marches to its own drummer because of just the natural working of bureaucratic organizations. There's a National Center for Toxicological Research, a fabulous research facility actually out in Arkansas, that again is not accountable to the policy people at the Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition. And then most recently, and if you've been reading press stories about food safety, there's an assistant commissioner, recently created position, assistant commissioner for food protection at FDA, which has created yet another center of gravity. This person is being referred to as the food safety czar. He's referred to as the person who's the directs food safety at FDA, but he really doesn't. He has no line authority, no resource authority. He's been brought out to the commissioner's office to develop a plan, for food safety in the future, but he's created a whole different, again, center of gravity and further fragmentation of the program. And the bottom line is that each of the people heading these organizations is a career civil servant, working within a system they didn't create. But there's no political level official, no politically accountable official, really, with full-time responsibility for food safety at the Food and Drug Administration. Now, you can argue that it's the Commissioner of Food and Drugs, who's presented by appointed by the President, and is responsible for everything that goes on at FDA. But I would just underscore full-time responsibility, and I'm going to make the case in a little bit that it's simply beyond the capacity of any commissioner to provide national leadership on food safety at the same time they're managing the drug approval program, the medical device regulatory program, and all the other programs at FDA. The final, I think, very important element of the institutional problem at FDA is that not only is nobody in charge of food safety at FDA, but the food program is chronically a backseat, sort of an orphan program, within the Food and Drug Administration. And this is I think, understandable in a number of ways. If you sort of look at what drives what FDA does and look at the culture that FDA, that normally controls FDA. And the fact is that most commissioners, you know, come in from a medical background, from the oriented towards what I would call the therapeutic side of the agency, you know, having to do with drugs and medical devices and biologics and so forth. And they come into an agency where the external constituencies that really care about what FDA does are the drug and device industry constituencies. I mean, great, you know, in addition, obviously, to the consumer community, the public health community, but the industry constituency, which is the politically potent set of constituencies surrounding FDA, on the drug side, are intensely motivated by everything that FDA does, because FDA controls access to the marketplace in a very complete way. And so the CEOs of drug companies, you know, wake up every day thinking about, how's FDA doing? How's my drug doing? Does FDA have the resources? Is FDA doing what I think they should do in the drug approval program? And so it's natural that a commissioner is going to be oriented, you know, and responsive to that. On the other hand, food companies, by and large, their market access is not controlled at all by FDA. There is no gatekeeper for access to the marketplace for food products. The CEOs of food companies are typically marketing folks. Believe me, they don't wake up in the morning thinking about FDA. When there's a food safety crisis, obviously they pay attention. But so you've got a dynamic in which very naturally the management attention of FDA flows towards the therapeutic side, the drug and device side of the agency. And as a consequence of that, the resources have flowed. And I don't know if Bill Hubbard tried to tell this story at all, but the prescription drug user fee law passed about 15 years ago in response to a concern that FDA did not have the resources to manage the drug review program well. Congress passed the Prescription Drug User Fee Act, which put a lot of industry user fee money into the drug program, and I think that has been an enormous success from the standpoint of getting that program up to speed, getting it staffed and equipped to do that job well. That's an important and positive thing, but it has further tipped the balance away from the food program. There are certain triggers, for example, in PDUFA that say that if appropriated funds for FDA don't reach a certain level, and appropriated funds that are applied to the drug program don't reach a certain level, then the user fee authority does not kick in, is not triggered, and so user fees would be lost if funding for the drug program from appropriated funds were to fall below a certain level. Well, that's had a natural tendency to draw resources out of the food program into the drug program. And so, you know, this is a big issue that the food program, you know, is basically an orphan within FDA. I'm going to skip over this slide in the interest of time about USDA, but it's got its own issues institutionally. I think the most fundamental one, if you think about long-term reform, is the institutional conflict of interest at USDA. USDA's primary and certainly legitimate issue in our government system is to look out for agriculture, to promote the economic success of the agricultural economy. And most of its effort, you know, goes into doing that. I see that as a fundamental conflict of interest with respect to the public health mission, you know, that food safety regulation should be about. I've tried to portray a system as a whole that includes FDA and USDA, and a system that has got its problems if you look at FDA, if you look at USDA separately, and then also, obviously, if you look at them together. And just sort of the, you know, bottom line being that if you look at the federal food safety system as a whole, you know, no one's in charge. You know, no one has the tools, the mandate, you know, to guide this integrated systems approach to food safety that I've been talking about. Nobody certainly has a mandate to be systematically preventive. Nobody has the flexibility, the wherewithal to allocate resources rationally in relation to risk. Again, the USDA program, which, you know, takes about $1 billion of the $1.5 billion that go into food safety regulation at the federal level, most of that is not used in a way that's effective for improving food safety. So, you know, we've got a system that's broken, in my view, and requires fundamental reform. And again, I mentioned GAO essentially made that finding earlier this year in declaring it a program at high risk of failure. There are a lot of little stories you can tell about why the system looks silly if you analyze how pizza and eggs and E. coli are handled, but I'm going to skip over those for now. So looking at the system as a whole, I think there's a lot of sentiment, and although it's by no means a consensus view, that the solution to this is comprehensive overhaul. That is, let's modernize all the laws, the Food and Drug Act, the Meat Inspection Act, the Poultry Products Inspection Act. Let's modernize them all to do the kind of prevention thing that I've been talking about, the risk-based allocation of resources and all of that. And then let's unify the agencies into a single agency. And in fact, Senator Durbin, who's number three in the leadership in the Senate, and Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro, who chairs the Appropriations Subcommittee in the House that oversees FDA and USDA, they've had legislation introduced this Congress and the preceding Congress that would do exactly those things. It would lay out that whole modernized approach to food safety. It would put the agencies together and would create a new independent food safety administration that would be independent of both USDA and HHS. I mean, that is, you know, that is the most drastic, most radical solution. It's the most comprehensive. And it's out there, and it's, I think, it's getting increasing attention, you know, by people who are kind of trying to figure out how we, you know, move forward on food safety in this country. My view has come, and I've been a supporter of that. I mean, I've written about that, and I believe that ultimately that is the ideal solution. And I think, and I say that in part, you know, or in large part, really, because of the resource reality. I think ultimately, you know, when Congress really focuses on this issue, which it's in the process of doing, you know, it's not going to tolerate the continuation of spending two-thirds of the money we've got for food safety on a fundamentally wasteful program. And so it's going to look at that $1.5 billion and say, well, if we put that together, and we put someone in charge of managing that resource, you know, to implement this preventive program, and really focus on the most significant problems, we would be a lot better off. And in fact, we would be a lot better off. And I think eventually that resource dynamic is likely to drive forcing these agencies together. But I view, for a number of reasons, you know, I think that the right next step and what really ought to be happening over the next couple of years is focusing on FDA. And I think, you know, so the reasons I hope are beginning to, you know, seem, you know, emerge already from what we've said. But just let me just hit these. And the first is obviously that the FDA, you know, has responsibility for most of the food supply. If you're going to address most of what's going on in food safety these days, whether it's imports, whether it's produce, most of the, you know, more of the more difficult problems and pressing problems arise under FDA's jurisdiction, so it makes sense to focus on FDA. I also think that the status of FDA and its capacity to exert leadership on food safety within the sphere of its jurisdiction is far more impaired institutionally than USDA. There are a lot of constraints on USDA's ability to do food safety, but it's not as much an institutional problem as a statutory problem and a culture problem. I mean, there's an undersecretary for food safety at USDA who can see the Secretary of Agriculture anytime they want. There's nobody with that degree of stature and authority within HHS with responsibility for food safety. So FDA is more in more dire need, I think, of sort of institutional change. It's also, I think, should be clear by now that its resource problem is much more dire. The USDA food safety budget keeps going up with inflation, basically, because as the laws are written, if it can't get the inspectors there to inspect the chickens don't go out the door. And so rest assured, the industry assures that the USDA food safety budget continues to keep up with whatever the costs are of delivering that inspection resource, the inspection activity. I mean, but just to illustrate the FDA budget problem, and again, I don't want to repeat what Bill said, but at this point about the operating budget at FDA, I mean, here we've got an agency that's responsible for almost $1 trillion of the nation's economy. Its operating budget, meaning what it has to, you know, after it's paid the staff and kept the lights on, paid for the facilities, its operating budget to do research, obviously to travel to do its job, you know, to mount initiatives, whether it's for foodborne illness, you know, infant formula, dietary supplements, food labeling, you know, a whole host of programs, the operating budget is $25 million, which is really nothing, you know, in terms of being able to mount and sustain initiatives to generate knowledge and to be a leader on food safety. So the agency is really, I think, down to a dysfunctional level in that respect. I guess that I'd also emphasize that just politically, FDA is far more ripe for reform. I mean, there's a long story to tell about, you know, why USDA is the way it is and why it stays that way. But while there are some of its industry constituencies who would like to be freed of this carcass-by-carcass inspection, there are a lot of elements of that, those industries that like it just fine. They get this mark of inspection, you know, USDA seal of approval in effect, and it's kind of worth it to them to put up with the inspection, essentially, so that they can have that imprimatur from the government. FDA, on the other hand, you know, doesn't have that kind of relationship with the industry. And in fact, the industry that FDA regulates has really come around dramatically in the last year or so, really in the last 6 months, to embrace the reality that FDA is broken, that FDA needs, you know, drastic change. And they've the Grocery Manufacturers Association, which is the predominant, you know, umbrella organization representing most of the large food companies, has put out proposals on import oversight, for example, that embody all these principles of preventive controls, strengthened FDA enforcement authority, you know, taking this sort of modern approach to food safety that I've mentioned. And so, you know, I think, and they have said outright that they consider anything to be on the table that's necessary to make FDA effective and successful in its food safety mission. This last point I'll touch on is that, in my view, food safety leadership belongs at HHS. I think it obviously goes without saying, given what I've said, that I don't believe it belongs at USDA. You know, I think that in order to preserve, you know, the health department of the government's role in food safety, we really have to pay attention to making it successful, because otherwise it's subject to being taken away and put somewhere else. And I think even the independent agency idea, though, you know, I could live with that, is not the best. I think it's best to have this function in the health department of the government. But USDA is very vulnerable now because of the perception, and I believe the reality, that its food safety program just isn't functioning. So I think we need drastic change, and I think we should be bold about it. You probably didn't see reports, but Congresswoman DeLauro actually introduced, or I should say announced, her plans to introduce a bill that would focus on FDA, and that would specifically remove FDA from, or remove food safety, I should say, from FDA, you know, unify all these components of FDA that I mentioned, Center for Food Safety, Center for Vet Medicine, National Center for Tox Research, and the food-related components of the field function would unify them and create a food safety administration within HHS, but separate from FDA, with that the leader of that organization reporting, you know, presidentially appointed and reporting to the secretary. And so it would accomplish that sort of unify and elevate, you know, need. And of course would also, most importantly, modernize the statutory mandate. Sometimes the issue comes up of, well, why, you know, reorganizing and just moving deck chairs around, you know, on the Titanic, what's the point? And I totally agree that organizational change without statutory modernization is not worth the effort. It's inherently costly to do that. It only makes sense if you've modernized the mandate that the agencies have. This bill would also, again, explicitly mandate this risk-based resource allocation idea in this new agency. There'll be a lot of people who will resist this idea of breaking up FDA, and I think some of it is, there'll be good arguments, substantive arguments, there'll be nostalgia arguments, there'll be, we don't want to give up the brand of FDA, you know, kind of arguments. I have a suggested solution to that problem. And maybe it's not essential that's the only solution, you know, to solving this as creating a separate agency. I do think that at a minimum, and I think, you know, are there creative ways to do this within the current, you know, under the current umbrella of FDA? But we've got to unify the components. I think, first of all, somebody has to be in charge of the health department's food safety program. The current situation is intolerable there. And that means unifying, that means putting someone in charge. And I think it also is critical that we elevate the food safety function. I just know from experience at FDA, experience at USDA, that if the person you're expecting to exert national leadership is two rungs down from the secretary, that person is not going to be able to exert national leadership. It just doesn't work. And I don't care how much good faith there is, how brilliant the people are, from a structural standpoint and the way in which the system works, that person two rungs down is not capable of, it doesn't have the stature, is not capable of making things happen in the government the way it is necessary to exert national leadership. So we've got to solve these basic institutional issues. This is the last slide, and I want to just add a few points, you know, with the help of this slide about why this sort of drastic change is necessary. And it has to do with some of the points I was mentioning earlier about the difference between the drug world, if you will, the therapeutic product world, and the food world. But it also, and just the reality that these are two distinct worlds. It's not like the same skill set that you apply, or the same constituencies you deal with, or the same science that's important on the drug side applies to the food side. In fact, it's completely different. Completely different constituencies, completely different kinds of issues, generally different science. There's just no synergy that's significant, in my view, between the drug side of the program and the food side. I'm not saying there's zero synergies, and we can talk about examples of where there is cross fertilization. But by and large, we've got two fundamentally different missions requiring two fundamentally different kinds of focus and initiative. With one person expected to exert that national leadership in both, and that it's just not possible. You add to that reality the fact that the problems on both sides, the science and technology on both sides, the issues on both sides of that divide, the therapeutic food divide, are getting more complex every year. It's more global. It's just too much, frankly, for any one individual to handle. And so, again, the bottom line for me, I think there's legitimate debate about what the fix is, but if you want to improve food safety and the role particularly that the federal government plays in food safety with respect to 80% of the food supply, you have to fix the structure. The weakness is built into the structure. You have to fix the structure, or I think FDA will continue to be perceived as dysfunctional on food safety and, in fact, will not be succeeding in the way in which people, I think, fairly expect. So I'm going to stop right there. I think we've still got some time for questions. I hadn't intended to go quite so long, but I really would enjoy comments, criticisms, and whatever thoughts about what I've said or questions about what I've said or other issues that I haven't addressed that you're interested in. I'd be welcome anything.